Airing the Addisons.
Let me say this, as followers of the Lord Jesus Christ, we've got to be careful and make sure that in everything, man, we are trying to get as close to what the word says as possible.
And we got to understand that with that type of wickedness, man, you know, God does not wink at that. That's judgment.
Promoting truth, wisdom, and empowerment.
And you don't have shades of truth. You have truth or you have error. You have fact or you have fiction.
And now we go into the thick of it.
Uh-oh.
Erin Addisons.
On American Family Radio, thank you so much for tuning in. We are back with you.
Yes.
Yes.
Yes, we are.
We are. And here we are.
And here we are.
Back with you to discuss some of those cultural issues of the day and to provide an unapologetic biblical worldview to those issues and to encourage you to keep holding the line. The gospel got to us and we've got to get the gospel intact to the next generation. And so that's what we try to do on a daily basis. And we appreciate you tuning in. I'm Miki.
And I'm Will.
And Sherry B is over in Studio CC as we near the end of the hour. We will open the phone lines and we'll get your calls so that you can weigh in on what we're discussing today. We are clip heavy today. And I know that that means there's a lot that I'm probably not going to be able to say as far as my commentary on the clips go. But just know that I do have a lot to say.
You have a lot to say. And have some good stuff to say. So,
well, thank you.
Yeah,
I appreciate that. I mean, it's rare that I'm speechless, but when I am speechless, it's genuine. And people have heard it on occasion, you know, being speechless, right? So, anyways, I read this article that was over on LifeSite News, and in fact, this was an article that was shared by Laura Perry. And came up in my news feed, and I didn't have time to read it at the moment, so I saved it, and I thought, you know, I'm going to read this later. And I read this article, and I was over at LifeSiteNews.com, and the headline grabbed my attention, and the headline is this: Ex-trans man wants the world to know that social media fuels kids' decision to change sex. And I immediately thought of last year's Brown University debacle with Lisa Lippman, Dr. Lisa Lippman, and her research as she researched and then posted a paper, submitted a paper, peer-reviewed, where she discussed rapid onset gender dysphoria. Yep. And among her findings was that kids are not only deciding that they are born into the wrong body in groups, but they are receiving online pressure to do this.
Yep.
And I was like, wait a minute, we have this information. We've been here before.
Right.
But what was amazing to me was to actually listen to the presentation. So this was a presentation that happened earlier this year in May in Canada. And this forum that they were hosting was called Gender Identity and Kids. It was a conference, actually, that was held in May up in Canada. And there was a panel discussion, and then they later opened it to Q&A. And I was, I don't know, I was shocked to hear firsthand what it's like to be a Gen Zer who really kind of developed their sexual identity as a result of online engagement. I mean, that is basically what one participant said. And this woman, she's 22 years old, so she's a little bit on the older side of the Gen Z, but she still falls into that group, right?
Yeah.
Her name is Dagny. And I will warn you, I think that this is important. You know, some people say this doesn't have anything to do with the discussion because she seems to be espousing the type of conviction that we say, well, we agree with her on that. But I do think it's important to note that while she has what is called now detransitioned, she is still sexually confused because she identifies as a lesbian. Okay. So I don't want people to think that even the clips that I'm going to play, that this is some sort of endorsement of this woman's lifestyle, because it isn't. But I think that what she is saying is very instructive for us as parents, is very instructive for us as ministers, those in the church who work with young people, to understand the huge impact that social media has on our young people today. Right. I mean, it's astounding.
Right.
And so we've got a series of clips here that I want you to hear from this young woman, 22 mm-hmm. years old. Her name is Dagny, and she is one of four women. And now listen to this, four young women, and she may be the oldest of the four, actually. They're like 20, 21, 22, somewhere's in there, and she may be the oldest. But four of them have founded this website called Peak Resilience Project. Peak Resilience Project. You can go to peakresilienceproject.com, as I did, and learn a little bit more about them, because I was kind of curious. All four of these women describe themselves as having detransitioned, which, you know, we've kind of got to come up with all these new terms in our culture right. today, because we don't know really, you know, we've moved away from what is black and white. And so right. now we've got all these different shades, but they have detransitioned, or as I learned on the website, desisted. They have desisted this lifestyle living as men, right? And so they have this website that deals with that, because according to them, these four women, there's only one narrative that's out there. And that one narrative is, if you believe you were born in the wrong body, mm-hmm. the only way to remedy that is to change your gender.
You know, and we'll hear this in the clips too, but it's amazing to hear the influence of social media and the
internet. Isn't it astounding?
Man, it's amazing to hear firsthand, like, this woman speaking about this and how it affected. So it to me, it was eye-opening.
It was very eye-opening. I'm so glad to hear you say that, Will, because, you know, sometimes I think, because you and I talk about these issues ongoingly, that maybe people are like, well, yeah, we know that.
Yeah.
But even as I listened to her, as you say, I thought, it's more egregious than we realize.
Right.
It is more insidious than we realize. And so let's get into it. Let's run. This is clip one.
As I'm going to discuss more later, we've been absolutely inundated with one narrative, one option, and one story since the beginning of this issue hitting the mainstream. One option at the risk of unspeakable and devastating consequences. If a teenager says she has gender dysphoria and wants to be a boy, then she should and must be allowed to transition. That's the story we've been sold. And it's the only story we've been sold. And detransitioners are an inconvenient contradiction to this story.
Now, I want to say this. The audio is not the best audio because it's a conference. They're kind of sitting on a panel. And so the microphone is just there in front of them. So I hope that everyone can hear what she's saying. If it's clear enough that people understand what she's saying, basically the point that she's making is that what is presented to us today in our culture,
one thing, one option,
is that there is only one option. If you are confused, the only hope, the only remedy for your confusion is to go along with what you think in your mind. Now, you think about this all across this country and all the different efforts that are in front of us to silence churches, to say that there is no help and there is no remedy for a person who is experiencing gender dysphoria. In fact, you can't fall on the mercy of God. There is no hope for you in Christ. Think about that. And here you have an individual who, as you may hear, as we work our way through these clips and discuss them, has no fear of God. In fact, she even says, you know, I didn't, my family was not religious, but, you know, and she'll go into her story a little bit, but she has no fear of God. But even with that, she now feels betrayed that the only thing that was presented to her was that she needed to go along with her feelings.
Mm-hmm. Right.
All right. Let's do this. Let's go to clip two.
All right.
I did have early instances of what I believe would be called gender dysphoria in my childhood. At 11 or 12, for example, I felt incredibly humiliated by the fact that my breasts were growing and I would have to start wearing bras. My period was and has been a source of angst and hatred from the moment I first started menstruating. And I'd heard that these things were supposed to be exciting for young girls, but but they just made me feel angry and afraid. And I thought that there was something wrong with me for feeling that way. And maybe most predictive and most embarrassing, I had a Yahoo Answers account. And when I was in seventh grade, I made a post with the title that was something like, I'm a 12-year-old girl, but I want to be a boy. And I remember that the answers were mostly quite dismissive, but there are a few that instructed me, a 12-year-old, to look into transsexual surgeries. But I didn't like any of the answers. I honestly thought that there was, and I wanted there to be, a boy button, something that I could just hit that would make me male. My family isn't religious at all, but I remember being that age and lying in my bed at night and telling God in my head that I would start going to church if I woke up a boy.
I would start going to church if I woke up a boy. I remember lying in my bed at night and telling God in my head that I would start going to church if I woke up a boy. She says she wished that there were such a thing as a boy button. And what she gets into, and we're going to have to pick up with it on the other side of the break, I believe, but what she eventually gets into is how social media exploded her confusion. So she was confused about her gender identity, if you want to call it that. Confused about puberty. Confused about what is natural in her growth and development. And instead of getting the type of help and aid that she needed, what she ended up getting online was encouragement. And as you'll hear as we go through this, in some instances, harassment, if she started to even doubt or question herself, that the only way to remedy her situation was to go along with what she felt in her head.
Social media fueled what was going on. Like, it wasn't, you know what I'm saying? It aided in her thinking of what she thought she was.
Exactly right. You know what? Let's try to squeeze in one more clip. Can we squeeze in one more clip before the break?
Yes.
Let's go with clip 3.
But my dysphoria eventually exploded when I turned 15. This was when I started to actually identify as trans. And like so many other trans teenagers, I first started courting my own trans identity because of two factors in my life. One, I had trans friends, two of them, both of them older than me, both of them female to male or FTM like me, and both of whom I looked up to. And two, I had a sharp increase in my social media use. I was never very active on social media before I was 15, but within months of creating an account on Tumblr and following several LGBTQ resource blogs, I had decided that I was non-binary. And that identity was more of a game to me. It was a fun distraction, a quirk that could make me special and interesting, if not to others, then at least to myself. And then that wasn't enough. And I wondered, should I take this further? And how far can I take it?
So it started out as a game. And I really hope that parents are listening. I hope that lawmakers are listening as we kind of go through this show today, listening to some of these clips, because it is incredibly disturbing. So it started out as a game. You know, how far can I take this? Like, so, okay, what if I want to explore what it's like to be a boy? You know, how fun is this going to be? And eventually getting to the question, like, will this just make me quirky? You know, this makes me special and this makes me interesting to be gender nonconforming, right? And if you listen carefully, what you hear from this woman, this 22-year-old woman who is what is now called a detransitioner, meaning that she believed she was a male trapped in a female body and began taking testosterone. And as I was reading her bio, she took testosterone for about 2 years, which kind of tells you why her voice, you can hear in her voice that it's a little bit changed, right? She believed that the only remedy to the confusion in her mind was to do something externally, to do something physically to her body. But she said there were two factors that really affected her. Trans friends that surrounded her. Those that she looked up to. Those who were older. And also a sharp increase in social media use. A sharp increase in social media use. We're going to pick up right here when we get back. Erin the Addisons on American Family Radio. Stay close.
headlong into the traditional process of being trans. New name, new pronouns, new clothes, new binder. I started to get very, very serious about starting hormones, and it stopped being a game. And the first place I tried on this new identity as a trans man was online. And I just want to say that I think it's incredibly important for everyone, parents, yes, obviously, but also teenagers and therapists and lawmakers, to understand what kind of impact social media can have on a developing mind. I, in essence, became a different person after I started using Tumblr. It's an unhealthy, upsetting, and toxic environment to even observe, let alone participate in as a teenager.
Welcome back to Aaron the Addisons on American Family Radio. Thank you for listening. I'm Miki.
And I'm Will. And that was Doris Akers with Sweet, Sweet Spirit.
Sherry B is over in Studio CC. The voice you heard in the clip is 22-year-old Dagny, who is one of four founders of this website, Peak Resilience Project. Peak Resilience Projects for women who transition to attempt to live as men and then realize that that didn't cure them. Mm. And so they went back to living according to their biological design. Now, I don't think that they are executing that perfectly.
Right.
Dagny describes herself as a lesbian,
right,
you know, living with her partner. And so I say that to you to say, what I take from her presentation, which this was a presentation that she was a part of in May of this year in Canada, where the discussion was on gender identity and kids. I take what she's saying in her presentation that is vital for me to understand.
Mm-hmm.
And those other things I don't affirm.
Right.
Do you understand what I'm saying?
Oh,
just to get to what is vital. I find too often that people feel compelled to do that, that they've got to accept everything because they're like, oh, I like what you're saying, so I accept everything in total.
Right.
No, I like what you're saying. You're making an excellent point here, but your lifestyle is still an affront to God.
Man, and whenever I hear stuff like this, what we're talking about, you know, even the confusion that's still there, I think of the author of Confusion. It just sounds like the enemy.
Absolutely.
All around. You know, it's like,
absolutely,
you know, in the life that was lived before and even now, it's still confusion
it's
going
still
on.
Confusion, still absolute confusion going on. But, you know, amazingly, in the midst of that, I think she has some information that is instructive for parents.
Mm-hmm.
And I think she has some warnings that that we would all do well to listen to,
yeah,
you know, interestingly enough. But one of the things that she says in that clip that we come back with is she says, you know, she tried on her new identity online.
Mm.
So she was able to create this entire new identity and then test it out among her peers, so to speak, or people that were a part of the community she was a part of.
Yeah.
Now, she mentions the website Tumblr. And
yeah,
in the last segment, I am going to share with you some excerpts from this article that I read, actually from her website, written by one of the four co-founders, a young girl, she's 20. Her name is Helena. And she wrote an article about Tumblr.
Hmm.
Now, I got to admit, well, I don't know. Do you have a Tumblr account?
No, and I wasn't familiar. I heard of it before. But when I heard her referencing Tumblr, and I was like, man, you know, it was just amazing to me, the stuff that she was saying about. Because I don't know much about Tumblr. I don't have an account.
Neither do I. But so here is what I learned. Actually, I learned this a couple days ago, but I just kind of overlooked it, because I hadn't heard from Dagny and I hadn't been to her website, so I
yeah,
didn't make the connections until today. But I was reading a timeline of Generation Z,
okay,
how Generation Z has kind of come of age. And one of the points on the timeline of Generation Z coming of age, growing up, is that they left Facebook.
Okay.
Right?
Yes,
so
I heard that.
Yeah. They kind of said, you know, no, that's
right,
your site, right?
Right.
So they went for these websites that allowed them to sort of form better, maybe deeper communities,
okay,
and also to be able to live anonymously if they wanted, right?
Ah.
They learned from their millennial elder siblings, according to this article that I was reading. They learned from their millennial elder siblings that everything that they do online can be tracked and it can right. one day be used against them.
Right.
And Gen Zers are incredibly entrepreneurial and they will not at all risk damaging their success in life. Mm. So they learned to take their social media use underground.
So Tumblr is similar to Facebook, but you can't be tracked?
Well, Tumblr allows for you to post anonymously. It allows for you to interact with people without having to really own your comments.
Gotcha.
And you'll hear that as I kind of get into this article that's written by Helena, another girl who describes herself as a detransitioner. Yeah. This was all new to me.
Right.
But things like Snapchat sort of cater to this age group that really yeah. wants to, you know, not have to own their online usage.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like they don't have to worry about things coming back to hunt them. And Tumblr
is that really
is sort
true?
Of like that.
Is that really true? I just wonder about, I think everything can be tracked. So I think it's a facade. Even the Snapchat chat, I think, you know, it's supposed to go away, but I don't think that stuff ever goes away. So I think that's even a facade, but anyway.
Yeah. And well, you know, I will say this, I don't know that it ever really goes away.
Right.
I'm sure it's housed somewhere.
It
may not be as accessible
right.
as
easy
you know Facebook
get,
uses
yeah.
and you know
yeah.
when you get people who write you nasty messages and you can just go right to their page and be like, oh, and that's just random, that just came to me
right.
like I was not connecting that to any recent experiences that may or may not be posted on my Facebook page at all right. Anyways, by the way, let me say this. The link to the LifeSite News article that I'm talking about today, if you guys want to go check it out, you can go to the Erin the Addisons page. It's on that page. You can click on, it's kind of like a freeze frame video, but you can listen to the presentation. And I think it is so well worth your time. I think it's worth the investment of time to hear how Generation Z describes the type of social media pressure that they're experiencing when it comes to their understanding their own sexual identity. To me, this sounds really crazy.
Yeah.
But this is what is actually happening. She talks about, you know, living in this world of Tumblr created almost like an alternate reality, right? You have an echo chamber. You are rewarded for agreeing with the group and you cannot go against the group, right? And I want to play that clip. That's clip number 5. And then I want to come out of that and I want to talk a little bit about how we see this represented in our larger sort of public square discussions.
Being affected and surrounded by that level of groupthink, that level of moral policing, and the constant implicit threats of social exposure and ostracization made me an intensely internal and anxious person. It made me paranoid about the motives of people around me. I saw my parents as bigots because Tumblr told me to, because they held out for so long to prevent me from starting hormones. Anyone that slipped up even once and misgendered me was, according to Tumblr, an enemy. And one incident, one she, had the ability to make me absolutely hate someone. And as an impressionable and insecure teenager, the only place I felt safe was in my head, after being exposed to Tumblr's version of morality and justice, and a place where I would never be misgendered. And while I didn't feel safe online either, I couldn't allow myself to critique my online peers, even though I had learned all of these unhealthy beliefs and behaviors from them. They had also taught me that they held the moral high ground. So I adopted and I parroted Tumblr's ideals, and my identity was unconditionally validated.
Man, can we think about, like, just process that for a second? Okay, this has moved beyond Tumblr, folks. This is no longer online communication. This is how people communicate in the real world, right? So you are looking for the winners and the losers. You're looking for the people who, by definition, have the moral high ground, right? And if you violate their tenets of morality, now again, these people have decided this. If you violate their tenets of morality, then what you have to do is then fall on your sword in culture.
Right.
You're dead to us.
Right.
You need to apologize. You need to make reparations. You need to vow to say that you're going to learn and ultimately you're going to do better. Mario Lopez, is experiencing this, right? Because he dared to tell Candace Owens that he thought that parents should not be listening to their three-year-old children, right? Who say that they are born into the wrong body. Parents should not be letting their three-year-old children decide that they want to be another gender. Well, you can't live in Hollywood and espouse that view.
You know what they call it now? They call it canceling people. You got canceled.
In real, like in life though.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Like in life. Like it's not, so it's, it's unbelievable.
It's crazy.
It's not like just losing your job. It's not losing your show or your source of income. It's not, it's called being canceled in life. In other words, you are not worthy to operate in the public square. Folks, this is what happens when we allow this microcosm that is Facebook and Twitter, and now I'm learning Tumblr and all of these other social media outlets and Instagram to a certain extent, maybe not the same thing, but when we allow these social media outlets to make us think that this is reality, it's not reality. People say things to you on social media, call it keyboard courage, that they would never say to you in person. And we think that this is true and genuine communication, and it isn't.
Right.
But listen to what Dagny is saying. She saw her parents as bigoted and hateful because they would not help her transition. She saw her parents as bigoted and hateful because that's how Tumblr told her to see her parents.
Mm-hmm.
So my question is, do you have teenagers raging against you in your own home?
Come on.
Are you conflicted trying to figure out, wait a minute, how did we become enemies? How did you go from I can do your hair and put bows in it to all of a sudden you hate me? And a lot of us want to dismiss this as, oh, it's just, you know, those teenage years. But no, it's something deeper and more sinister than that. It is that our children are becoming our enemies right under our own noses. They are getting their political talking points. They are learning how to engage culturally. And they're doing that all against what we are teaching while living under our roof. It's happening on social media. Now, I think, you know, probably the extreme case is that your child says, you know, I'm born into the wrong body. And they demand that you take them down to an endocrinologist and get them some kind of replacement hormones or something like that. I mean, I think that's extreme here. But it's not unthinkable.
Right.
It's not beyond the realm of possibility. This is what we're dealing with. And so when we have questions about, you know, what's happening, I think that there really should be questions that exist across the board. And we really need the body of Christ working full throttle on all levels. We need to pay attention to what's happening with our lawmakers.
Mm-hmm.
We need to pay attention to what's happening with social media. We need to pay attention to what's happening in our churches. And we need to pay attention to what's happening in our homes. There's not one of those areas that I just mentioned that we could just be like, oh, let somebody else handle that. We need to actually have our finger on the pulse of all of those different situations. We need to know what is going on. Look, when Mark Zuckerberg starts talking about filtering the community, when he starts talking about creating the kind of environment that is welcoming.
And that's what they're doing. If you look at what's going on with the social media, that's exactly what they're trying to do. Weed out who they feel like is not part of the community.
That's right.
That may harm the community.
That's right. That is exactly right. Because liberals have the moral high ground in our culture today.
Mm.
Now, we know that that isn't true.
Right.
But what I'm telling you is for all intents and purposes, and the way we function today, liberals have the moral high ground. Even though it's not rooted in science, there is nothing biologically set or fixed in the ground that they've taken. There is nothing that they can go back to and say, this doesn't move, this is immutable, this is why we hold this position. Nope, it's all fluid. They even use that in some of their descriptions. Even though it makes no logical sense, they have given themselves. Now listen, and this is what is really scary, folks. They have given themselves the moral high ground, but they have also created the types of communities online to sustain them.
Mm.
So we have these positions and we create the kind of environment where we get to maintain these positions and kick you out if you disagree.
That's why
this is an important conversation.
And they feel like they have the moral high ground and they will look at Christians and say that we are immoral.
Come on.
They didn't flip it.
Yes, that's right.
You know, we're hateful, wicked, you know, in our thoughts, because we're trying to change people, you know. So they've taken what they feel is the moral high ground and they flipped it on the Christians and saying that you guys are the immoral ones.
That's exactly right. Now, imagine you and I are able to look at that and Will the Great, we are able to process that and we are able to say we know it isn't true. We have steeped ourselves in the word of God, so mm-hmm. we are full of truth, right? So we know that what they're saying is inaccurate. But think about our teenagers. Can our teenagers do that? Can some of our younger millennials, can they do that? They can't do that. All
not
they have ever known,
not
unless we equip them. Because all they have ever known is this online society that they exist in.
Yeah.
All they have ever known are the tenets of this culture that is online. They set the rules. They determine who is and isn't the pariahs among us. And so imagine trying to pull your Gen Z away from that.
Mm.
I mean, look, you know what? Imagine trying to pull yourself away from that.
Come on.
There is much work still left to be done. We got one more clip. I want to come back with that clip, and then I want to move on to this young girl, 20 years old, Helena's assessment of Tumblr. It's going to shock you. You don't want to miss that. Erin the Addisons on American Family Radio. We'll be right back.
It's rare for me to make it through a single day without thinking at least once, I wish I was a man. But it's so minimal compared to what I felt at 16, and now I have no intention of continuing a medical transition. It was ultimately a mistake for me to transition in the first place. I thought at the time that I had no other choice. Living and being content and fulfilled and happy without medically transitioning wasn't an option for me or for so many other detransitioners. And it's time to change that. It's time that we became aware of how much pain and negativity this context is causing. The fact that I thought I had only one option was an incredible source of misery, desperation, terror, and obsession for me. And I was already an unhappy teenager. I didn't need the added pressure of a life choice that I felt had to be made and carried out immediately. And this, my experience, I just want to say, was back in 2013, a long time before now, when we were transitioning 8-year-olds in California and giving 13-year-olds mastectomies. I can't imagine the pressure that kids feel now, or that parents feel. It's time that we stop telling kids that every single one of them that experiences gender dysphoria as a 15-year-old will still be experiencing that same level of gender dysphoria at 21, at 20, or even 19. And that's what I was told. I was told that it would never go away. And I was told this by activists and by my peers and by medical professionals.
I was told this by my peers, by activists, and by medical professionals, that what I feel will never go away. It will never get better. This is how I am going to be forever. And as a teenager, you already have other issues.
Yeah.
So can you imagine having someone solidify that in your mind? I just want to point out, and by the way, if you're just joining us, thanks for listening. This is Erin the Addisons on American Family Radio. I'm Miki.
And I'm Will.
And Sherry B is over in Studio CC. We'll open the phone lines up in just a little bit. I do want to get through a little bit of this Tumblr post here. But you heard the voice of a young woman, 22 years old. Her name is Dagny, and she describes herself as a detransitioner. She tried to live as a man and then went back to living as a woman after she found that that lifestyle held nothing for her. But what shocked me about her account was the great influence of social media on her decision to transition. And I want to point out a little bit of the hypocrisy, and you may have heard it and caught it even for yourself. But she said, you know, basically, we are telling kids that there is only one option for your emotional well-being, to go with what you feel. There is only one option. If you think you are a man trapped in a woman's body, then you need to do whatever it takes to get your outsides to match your insides. There's only one option. Now, I want you to pause for just a second and think about that and ask if it makes rational sense. Now, I know in this discussion, there's not much that's rational. There's not much that's reasonable.
Right.
But I just want you to think for a second. Does it make rational sense? Does it make logical sense that a group that defines itself in some ways as non-binary or fluid says that there's only one option? That doesn't make sense at all. It doesn't make sense. So you are kind of defined by the fact that you are beyond definition. Like, you're beyond defining. You are beyond being placed in a category. That's sort of your mantra. That's your chant.
Yeah.
That's your war cry. Your war cry is that we are gender non-conforming. We do what we want. We are gender fluid. We're non-binary. However, when it comes to confusion and comes to people seeking and searching out, then we say, well, look, you only have the one option.
Right.
You only have the one option. You understand that that's, look, if you've got the Q in the LGBTQ plus, and then there's other letters that are coming in and people already know this, right? But you've got the Q that's queer and questioning. Do you understand that we've got people who want legislation in place that they can't even question? Do you understand that now that's oppressive of those people? But we don't stop and think about that. Because you know what? Dagny said this, and we didn't have it in a clip, but this is what she said. She said that Tumblr taught her how to develop her outrage. And the unforgivable question in Tumblr world, the unforgivable question in social media use and the way we engage was to ask her why. That's the unforgivable question. So don't ask me why I need to be a man, she said. She said, if someone were to ask me that question or to misgender me, and today we also have dead naming.
Dead naming.
And people are going, what, dead naming? Dead naming. It's to call a person by a name that they once went by before they transitioned.
Hmm.
So you call a person by their former name, okay, then that is being insensitive. That's hateful. So to ask a person why they believe that they are a man, if they're a woman, why, that is unforgivable. Do you understand? So look, to this point here that Dagny is making, we've got online social media use that has created the type of unreasonable engagement that many of us see reflected in our kids in our own homes. It's reflected in college classrooms today. It's reflected online. And I'm sorry to say it, folks, but it's also reflected in the halls of Congress, where these people do not know how to engage in debate.
That's right.
All they know how to do is engage in ad hominem attacks. All they know how to do is tell people that they're hateful and racist. This is like teen girl fighting. I mean, that's what we're looking at today.
Yep.
Let me share a little bit of this because I want to get some of this in. I read this article written by 20-year-old Helena on the website peakresilienceproject.com. And she was talking about Tumblr. The title of it is Tumblr, a call out post. She starts this way. What would happen if every troubled, isolated, self-loathing, depressed, and emotionally overwrought teenage girl in the world wound up alone on an island? Tumblr. Tumblr would happen, she says. Then she goes on, Tumblr, you either love it, hate it, or have no clue what it is. Tumblr is the microblogging platform that has given birth to some of the most intensely devoted fan bases online, with over 456 million registered accounts as of 2019.
Wow.
Tumblr, she writes, is known as the core of a certain brand of leftist ideology. Now, listen to this. I did not know this at all. Tumblr is known as the core of a certain brand of leftist ideology, not so affectionately dubbed the social justice warriors.
Mm.
It is these SJWs that have taken the site from a platform for fan content to a highly influential ideological powerhouse.
Wow.
She goes on to say that there is a saying on Tumblr, a running joke on Tumblr, that Twitter is everything Tumblr was 3 years ago. In other words, whatever social justice topic is fashionable on Twitter at any given time has long since been beaten dead on Tumblr. So the point that she goes on to make is that what we see, what we hear coming from our politicians, coming from celebrities in places like Twitter and Instagram, she's saying that they have learned their talking points as those talking points have come from Tumblr.
That's amazing.
This should be frightening to people. Yeah. When you think about how people engage and what people think as is right and is wrong, and you've got teenage girls who are fueling and driving and giving credence to these talking points. Let me read something else to you here from this 20-year-old Helena. After months or years of developing opinions and a worldview through, listen to this, spoon-fed arguments that disengage the mind from processing the information at hand autonomously, critical thinking skills can take a serious hit.
Hmm.
When one listens to a live debate or has an engaging conversation with another human being, information can be shared back and forth, enabling all parties present to grow from the debate, learn from each other, sharpen their critical thinking skills, and refine their own arguments and worldviews. On Tumblr, this necessary form of communication and intellectual development is lost because of what is called factory farming.
Wow.
What they are commenting on all day long are just a series of opinions. Very few people actually check or read the original post. They don't know the original debate. They're just commenting on comments all day long. Let me tell you something. I have a post out today, and if you go to afa.net, you can read it up on the stand. It's also been shared on Facebook. You can check it out. And the title of the post is, "I Caught a Snowflake. She Didn't Melt." I had an exchange, and I write about it. I started the exchange in a previous post, but I dedicated a single post to this exchange that I had with a 17-year-old who really, I would say, demonstrated for me what we're talking about today, that we have lost the ability to debate. We have lost the ability to have discussions around issues. And now what we have devolved into is hysteria. Someone says something that I don't like, then I accuse them, or I, you know, basically get hysterical. And I'll tell you, and you can go and you can read the post for yourself. I had a decision to make. Am I going to stand here and engage this 17-year-old girl, or am I going to apologize that I hurt her, that I triggered her, or am I going to walk away and say, okay, oh, I'm not dealing with that? I decided to stand and engage. I decided to take one for the team. All right. We got to do it. If we're going to start shaping our kids, if we're going to teach them we can debate. We can debate. If you want to know how the conversation turned out, you can go to afa.net. You can read the blog post. And then you can also find it on Facebook if you go there. All right. Let's do this. There was more that I wanted to read from this Tumblr post, but let's open the phone lines. 888-589-8840. Will the Great, where should we go first?
I don't think we're ready for the calls yet.
Oh, really? I thought I got a message from Sherry saying that we were.
I see people calling now, though.
Okay. Well, then that means I can continue on reading here, right?
Go ahead.
Okay, Helena on this post that she writes calling out Tumblr, she says that there are three major issues with Tumblr, and she's going to do it in sort of a three-part series. And the first part that she gets to, and I think this is important for us to understand, she says Tumblr is designed in a way that fundamentally enables extreme groupthink, manipulation of information, destructive interactions, and distorted ways of thinking. Now, can you imagine that when people are learning or thinking that they're engaging, and really what they're doing is engaging in destructive interactions? You know, one of the things that she writes in this post that I think we see happening today, like in real life, right? I hate to say it that way, is that she said, whenever someone says something on Tumblr, and think of other social media platforms, what happens is the group mobs up against that one person, and that person has to publicly say that they're sorry for what they said and basically repent. They have to repent, and then the group collectively makes a decision whether or not they're going to re-enter them.
That's crazy.
All right, let's try to squeeze in one call before we go.
All right.
Who do we have first?
Gary in Oklahoma. Hey, Gary.
Yes, how are y'all doing?
Good.
I was just kind of wondering, the shootings that occurred and listening to your show about Tumblr, is it at all possible they've gotten on this online network and made a pact or something like that to go through with some of these things?
You know, I don't know. I mean, I would say this. If we could make any associations with the discussion today and what we've seen happening in this country, I would say definitely age, and I would say a lack of ability to reason in situations, you know, to say, I don't like this. It's within my power to change it through these channels. I think this is why this conversation becomes largely important, because we have stifled our young people's ability to reason. And so then they're just acting out in this way.
No debate. Just go with what we say has been lost.
Yeah, absolutely. Do we have one more call?
No,
we don't have time for one more call.
No, that's it. I think the first person hung up. So
okay. All right. Good. Well then. All right. I know. Like, I've been told that I talk a lot, and so
you've been told that before.
Well, just once or twice.
Oh,
but, I mean,
come
on. Can you imagine if we open up this microphone and I don't have anything to say?
No, I can't imagine.
Right.
That.
I can't imagine that either.
No, not at all.
You know who you are. All right. So. I'm petty.
Let it go.
I'm petty. I can't. These people bring out the Tumblr in me. They bring out the Tumblr in me, which is like, you know, I can't overlook it. No. Anyway, we are wise, the Bible says, if we can overlook an offense.
Amen.
True.
It's not easy all the time, but
it's not easy, but it is wise. All right, we're out of time. Thanks so much for listening to Aaron the Addisons. We'll be back with you tomorrow. Mm-hmm. Until then, Lord willing.
God bless.